It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're listening to Puck and Roll.
Trucks at the superwash station. Spin them tire wet wheels on the pavement. Tell me that paycheck making. 12-inch kickers get shaken. Them girls get to painting on denim and makeup. Pouring Tito's in a wrap 44 cup. In between city limit signs on any given Friday night.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hockey fans, light the lamp this winter with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. New customers can bet just $5 pregame moneyline on any NHL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. If that wasn't enough excitement, you can turn small bets into bigger payouts with same-game parlays. Combine multiple bets like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more for your shot at an even bigger payout. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code THPN, bet $5 on any NHL team to win their game, and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
Hello, and welcome back to the Puck and Roll podcast. Today, we have a special guest, and we'll focus the episode on the 2023 draft class, and specifically a focus on the European players within it. Today's guest is my fellow Dubber Prospect scout, Jordan Harris, who is not that Jordan Harris. So we're got to make that very clear, as we are a bit of a Habs podcast. This is not the Habs player, Jordan Harris, but a scout. So Jordan, welcome on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Actually, it's funny, Sebastian, when you messaged me, the first thing I thought was, man, what a letdown I'll be when people look on screen and say, who is this guy? This is not the guy I thought. So I'm glad that you got that out of the way. And I'm not the defenseman. I'm the 31-year-old accountant. So
same thing. I mean, really.
Yeah. Way cooler, in my opinion.
Oh, cool. Yeah, of course. Yeah, everybody dreams of being an accounting manager and not an NHL player, I know.
I mean, what more could you ask for? As a child, everyone dreams to be an accountant rather than a hockey player. We all know this, especially in Canada, right?
Of course.
Just before we delve into the actual podcast, just a little side story that's kind of funny. Me and Jordan met last year at the Ottawa 67's home opener against Kingston, which was my first ever live viewing of Shane Wright. And I sat there with a notebook, just taking a bunch of notes, right? I was just getting into scouting right then. Like, I was not affiliated with our prospects in any way. I was just there watching prospects for the fun of it. At that point, I wouldn't even have called myself a scout by any means. And during the second intermission, Jordan just asked me, like, are you like elite prospects or Dauber or something scouting? And I was like, nah. I was like, that's ridiculous. Of course not. And now we're both with Dauber just a year later. So yeah, pretty funny.
It is really funny how that works out. And it's what's funny about it is that I saw you, like, you were making copious amounts of notes on your notepad.
It was not an efficient method at all.
Oh yeah. And you're scribbling stuff down and all that. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, okay, well, there's no way you're with an NHL team because you look like you could have been drafted that year. And, you know, and I figured, you know, you thought you looked 18. So I figured that.
I was 19. You weren't far off, to be
fair.
Yeah,
exactly. And then, but you know, I do know that, you know, a lot of the people at Dauber and Elite Prospects are in university and in college and stuff like that. So I looked at, you know, you're diligently taking notes and you're, you know, frantically scribbling things down. I said, oh, you know, like, are you scouting? Do you have a publication? Are you a Dauber Elite Prospects guy? You're like, oh no, I have a podcast though. And then it's funny. I actually, I really wanted to get into this because I'd done this a bit with football, several years back. And there's a lot of people who do it with football, but not as many people in Canada, obviously doing NFL football. So I had kind of wanted to get into it in hockey. And then once I had met you at that game, I was like, oh, you told me your podcast. And I started, I followed your podcast. I was scrolling through the, I don't think at that time you guys had your Twitter handles in the bio. So I'm scrolling through all the following and stuff like that. And I ended up creeping you up to figure out, okay, you're the guy who I talked to. And then I was like, I got to reach out to this guy again to watch another game. Cause you know, I'll hang out with anybody who likes prospects. So.
Yeah. And then we went to a Peterborough Petes game later on in the season. Well, in Ottawa, like St. Stephens versus Peterborough. And it was the Toonie Beer Night, which was very fun.
Yeah, you can't miss those games.
I mean, this year they have downgraded that to 250 beers, so that they have hiked up the price. But they've extended that time to not just like last year was to puck drop, and now it's the end of the first. So that is honestly an overall win, because you can sneak in an extra beer or two in there.
In a year and a half, I'll come join you guys when I'm legally allowed to drink in Ontario.
You can't even drink in Quebec yet, buddy.
I don't know. Like 3 months.
One step at a time here.
Oh my gosh!
I know you're on a podcast with two children and a mustachioed man in Joshua.
You know what's funny is I was thinking about bringing up. I know I'm kind of mowing the lawn a bit, but I was I wanted to chat at some point about, you know, whenever there's a really star prospect who plays for a team that historically hasn't been a good hockey nation. And, you know, they eventually carry them to the World Juniors. And then it's like, hey, they're at the World Juniors. And then you don't really get to see much about this player because their team's getting caved in and the shots are 70-4, you know, against Canada. And I was going to say, well, you guys all remember when Slovenia made the World Juniors and Anze Kopitar, you know, led them. And then I was going to say, I don't think you guys were even born.
I was three. I was three in 2005.
Which means I was one. Oh, no, I was born. I was born in 2005.
So you weren't born yet during that World Junior Championship?
Was in September 2005 or was it in like...
Well, wait, Jordan, was it before he was drafted or after he was picked?
I can't remember. I'm going to have to say after he was drafted. Because
okay.
Let's go.
So,
I was alive.
So you were a few months old, Aaron.
So you were born after Sidney Crosby was drafted into the NHL.
I was born before Crosby after 2004.
Wait, what?
Because Crosby,
were you
2005?
Are you an 04 and 05?
I'm an 05, but early 05.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry. When you said September, I thought, okay.
Exactly. I was thinking September, and I was like, oh my God, were you born after Carey Price was picked? Like, that would be, wow.
I'm not a baby. There's a six-month difference here.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, no, for sure. Yeah.
In that case.
Yeah, you're way more mature than those guys.
Oh, yeah, now I just feel old. I think I was born the year after Jaromir Jagr was drafted or made his debut, something like that. So I'm an old man compared to these two.
Yeah.
The elder statesman of the podcast. But Jordan, I guess we'll get straight into it. So for Dauber, you are the dedicated Russian scout.
Yeah,
and a Europe crossover scout, correct?
Correct. Yep.
Let's stick with Russian players at first. We all know who the top Russian prospect in this draft class is, and we're not going to talk extensively on Michkov just because everyone's talking about Michkov.
For sure.
Which Russian players have like surprised you the most in a pleasant way this season?
Yeah, Dmitry Simashev. Dmitry Simashev, he plays for Lokomotiv Yaroslavl. He's in the KHL. He started the season in the KHL with them, and when I was first looking for players, you know, you're trying to look at players to scout, and you're looking at, you know, some preseason stuff, and you know who made noise in the NHL the previous year and all the other stuff, and I looked at see if there are any draft eligibles currently playing in the KHL. This was like a week into the actual season, and I saw, you know, a big defenseman playing for Lokomotiv. And I said, okay, well, it's, you know, 6'4", he's 200 pounds, but whether he's good or not, I'm going to have to know about it, because chances are, if he's that big and he's playing in a pro league, that NHL scouts are going to like this guy. And so I had my first viewing. I believe it was his first or second KHL game, and he was a seventh defenseman, and he looked like a guy who was, in the back of his head, if I make one wrong move, I'm being sent down to junior tomorrow. That's kind of what it looked like. I thought at first he was a slow skater. I thought he moved slow. And it kind of tied in because, you know, I find smaller guys look faster maybe than they are sometimes, and bigger guys might look a little slower. And I wasn't impressed. And then I went back and I watched a game, I think 15 days later. It wasn't very long. And I'm seeing a guy who things had slowed down for him, like the speed of the game slowed down for him. He was moving much quicker, and I realized it wasn't that he's slow, he was just thinking slow in that first game. So he looked right at home in the next game I watched, and more he is, instead of just making only the simple pass, he's really he's looking up ice, he's you know, carrying the puck out on the breakout, he's not just, you know, making the little, you know, I don't know, 10 feet pass to his D partner, and then they're doing the rest. He's making the stretch passes. He's jumping up in the rush at times. He's timing his pinch as well. And his compete's good, and he's very good defensively. It's I really like that about his game. And one thing I've kind of learned over, you know, the years, I think when I first started, I would have loved a guy like I think about Bobby Brink, and you know, the jury's still out on whether he's going to be much, but I would love, even though he's small, slow, and you know, his compete's average, I would have still loved him because I love the skill and everything. And I really was I think one of my blind spots was guys who are big, who have good compete and can also move. So anyway, I watched more of him, and I came to appreciate his game a lot. Yeah, there aren't a lot of set, like, it's being 6'4", 200 when you're 17 is big, and a lot of guys aren't comfortable in their bodies yet, and a lot of players don't play with the correct leverage when they're that big. They're thinking a few in this draft class alone from Russia, and also there's guys, yeah, like your coordination's off. Like, you might have been 6'2" 6 months ago, you know, like these guys are in the time where they're growing a lot, and I really liked him, and the more and more I watched, the you know, the better he was, and he's been sent down to the MHL for some games in there. The only thing I have against him is he has one assist all year, and that includes 13 games in the MHL, and like that league's not that difficult. He plays for a good team, and he's way bigger than everybody else. I think he has more offense than one assist in 13 games in junior, and no assists in 15 games as a seventh defenseman. But I've watched him in junior. He's not great on the power play. I probably wouldn't want him leading a power play. I think he is because he's just the best player on the team, or one of them. But I like, he skates well and all that stuff. The offensive thought process isn't there with him yet. But there, you know, that in the NHL, if you're 6'4" and you can skate above average for 6'4", and you've got high compete and you can play defense, even if you add a little bit more of a layer of offense, you'll go far. I don't want to say Keandre Miller, but like, you know, think of a guy who didn't have a ton of offense in his draft year. I'm not linking the two because they are different, but you know, I still don't think he has a ton of offense right now, but he's a great player. You know, maybe it's a bit of a down year with him and Truba right now, but he was excellent last year. So,
admittedly, I haven't been able to watch the matchup yet, but I will before Sunday, before our Dobber meet, because I do want to just be familiar with the way he plays. Yep. But from what you're describing, the player that comes to mind from last year's draft class with that type of description is also someone that Aaron would be very familiar with, in Lien Bichel.
Yes,
Is that, in terms of like mobility, strength, skating, while having limited offensive potential, but yeah, still like an NHL scout's favorite type of player, yeah, playing pro hockey? But yeah, Bichel was junior Sweden last year, or was he pro? He was pro. So yeah,
he was pro.
And I am not a fan of his, but
I know you're not.
I think Simashev is more controlled, and I think he moves better than Bichel. He's mean enough, but Bichel was like, that's a ultra mean man. Yeah.
And the big thing with Bichel is that one tendency he had, especially early on in his draft year, he ironed it out a little bit. The closer we got to the draft, was his decision making in transition. Like he'd under pressure, he'd often like ice the puck or something, like classic, yeah, Ben Sherratt hockey, which,
yeah,
everyone here is now very familiar with.
Yes, I'm a Red Wings fan, for those of you who don't know. So I have Ben Sherratt on my team right now.
Which is I think we can all have some compassion with that.
For sure. But the reason why Moritz Seider hasn't had as good of a season this year, and part of it's who he's playing with.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting. And I also like that they brought up physical leverage, like leverage being a key component of physical play, because for me, like, increasingly, the more I'm scanning, the more I'm watching, the more importance I'm according to leveraging and how that plays into physical play. So some players are really big, but when you say, oh, it's a big player who plays small, it's kind of a very abstract concept. And I think one of the key components of that is leveraging, right? So what one player I watched today was Matthew Wood, who I know Jordan is someone that we were talking about earlier on, like almost a year ago now, when we were at that Peterborough game. We were talking about Matthew Wood and how the BCHL production might translate to the NCAA. And I'm just not seeing it with him. And off the air, we were talking about this as well. And my comparable for him is an Arthur Kaliev with a slightly weaker shot and worse off-puck movement in the offensive zone, which, what does that make him, right? I'm not quite sure. But a big thing with Wood is that he's 6'3". He's a big guy. But he is so upright in his stance. He never gets leverage. He gets pushed down quite easily against far older competition than he's used to playing against. And yeah, like are there any other examples from guys like that you've scouted this year that are maybe like hyped to a certain extent, but also for their physicality, but who are being out leveraged?
Yeah, Daniil Boot for sure. Like, and you know what? I think there are people who, I think there are players who just don't play with great leverage, and maybe they never will. But I don't necessarily like holding the 6'4", 6'5", 17-year-olds for some of the reasons I mentioned earlier. They might not have always been as big. I'm a Red Wings fan, so Simon Edmondson, like, he was, I believe, going into his draft year, he was 6'3", and now he's just over 6'6" right now, and he's in his draft plus two. So it's, you guys grow quick and everything, and it might be difficult. Like, think about Owen Pickering. I think he was 5'8" when he was drafted in the WHL, and now he's like 6'5". Like, that's ridiculous. But yeah, Daniil Boot's another guy. It's funny because when he gets going, he moves pretty well. He's definitely doesn't get going very quickly. But I look at a guy, once he's going with his size, if he can play with leverage, like, that will go a really long way. And he's not there yet. And it is frustrating to watch. Was it Grudinin?
Yeah.
Was it Grudinin? Yeah. He's not lame.
Yeah, he's very small. I ranked him 17th overall last year, and I'm pretty sure I remember him being like 157 pounds or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very slight.
He knocked Daniil Boot right on his butt.
Yeah.
He didn't even flinch. It was just kind of like, yeah, I'm just going to crush this guy. And he's 9 inches taller than me and, you know, 60 pounds heavier. And it was difficult to see. And with also with Boot is, the battles around the boards as well. Like he's your typical big man who plays small. But but there are a lot of things I really do like about his game. Like NHL goaltenders are no match for his shot. He can pick it. He can score. He actually has surprisingly good hands for some. Like he's actually pretty good in tight spaces sometimes.
In single variable scenarios. When there are at least like two defenders converging on him, it's almost like a deer in the headlights. But it's a one on one. That's where his hands actually do excel because he doesn't actually panic in those situations.
Exactly.
I mean, Jordan, you know how I feel about Vinyl Boot. Which is not the most positive.
Yeah.
But his shot is tremendous, and in an extremely strong draft class, his shot in a vacuum is top 10, which is exceptional considering the amount of shooting talent that there is in this class, going from Bedard to Michkov to Fantilli to Dalibor Dvorsky and Braden Jaeger, Edward Charlotte, even a guy like Colby Barlow, right? There's a lot of shooting skill in this draft class, and Daniil Boot's shot is a top 10 in the class. Yep. And as many issues as I have with his overall game and how I think it projects or doesn't project to the NHL, the shot is undoubtedly a huge strength.
Yeah, for sure. I also think that his motor is I don't say it's good, but it's not bad. Like it's pretty fine. Like we were talking about Matthew Wood, and like Matthew Wood looks like a guy who's a little bit like got a little bit too comfortable playing against, you know, BCHL players. And
there is not much of a motor there. He really needs to work on stamina.
And Boot is definitely ahead of that. But yeah, that's kind of what I think on him. I know I'm higher on him than you are. But I think
I've only clocked two viewings, right? Like Russia is not my area, right? I'm scared of the OHL this year. And it could also just be that unluckily I got two of his worst games, right? Like,
but the people I know who have watched him, a decent amount, all seem to be people who have him lower than the people who I'm pretty sure haven't watched him at all. There's still some
because the production
in the top 15,
the production's exceptional.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, I don't know. I think I'm kind of lower than the general public. But I do see a player who, you know, will have to change a bit of the way he plays, but I do see a path to the NHL for sure.
Interesting. And then maybe just quickly shifting away from Russia, we'll get back there later. A player that I know we've both watched and quite appreciate is David Reinbacher, who is logging significant minutes in a very, very good professional league in Switzerland.
Yeah, for sure. I think people, people may not as tuned in. I think when they hear the Swiss league, they think, oh, well, like Switzerland's it's below, Finland and Sweden and all that other stuff. No, the Swiss league is very good.
It's better than the Finnish Liga for sure.
No doubt. The Finnish Liga is a pretty weak league. Why the Swiss league is so good is because they pay really, really well. And with that, you see way more Canadians and Americans playing in the Swiss league than you would like somebody going to, the Finnish Liga or something like that. Right. So that's a very strong league. They always, the Swiss teams, obviously, so there's Champions Hockey League as well that goes on, similar to Champions League in soccer. The Swedish teams always end up, being in the finals, but the Swiss teams are probably their biggest competition outside of a couple Finnish teams. So he, as a draft eligible, he's a late 04. He is logging the top pair minutes. He is playing like 20 minutes a game. His production is good. He's big. I think he's 6'2", and he's nearing 200 pounds. He skates well. He moves well. He's strong. His passing is good. His shot's okay. His shot's pretty good. I don't like the way he carries the puck at all, especially out of his zone. I think he really gets deer in the headlights and he starts to, it's really difficult to watch actually. But, other than that, like I love the guy and I've seen people rank him as high as like the top defenseman in the draft class. I'm not so sure I want to go there, but he's definitely a guy who you know, a right shot defenseman who's 6'2", almost 200 pounds and moves well and is logging a bunch of minutes and getting a lot of production in a very good league, that's definitely first round caliber for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think like for me, he's probably a 22 to 32 range type of player where like there's a lot of skill there. I agree with you that it in transition, his hands fail him because of just like the high speed of movement.
That's what it is.
Offensive zone. I really quite like his deception. He can really flash like a fake shot to get around a forechecker very nicely in the offensive zone when he isn't moving at top speed. I've also really liked his shot selection. His actual shot isn't great, but he knows when to use it and he knows how to use it most effectively. He does not shoot to score. He shoots almost exclusively for rebounds, which is why he likes to shoot from the hash marks rather than from like straight head on to try to get a rebound to a teammate driving like the back door. And he's a very calculated player, and like the skating is solid. It's not spectacular, but it's solid. He's mobile in all four directions. I've really enjoyed watching him this season. And again, like we see this every year where the NHL overvalues Canadian and American players at the draft. Yeah, you always see the European players just fall, whether it be due to lack of viewings or any type of nationality bias. But when you see a player like Reinbacher perform as well as he has in the significant minutes he's played in Switzerland, that is something to keep an eye on. So I've liked him quite a bit. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, and further to your point on the Europeans is, it's definitely that it's exposure bias. It's other stuff like that. And you always see this every year. You'll see a few European players who shoot up draft boards at the end. And a lot of people, you know, I think the average fan would think, oh, is this somebody who performed really well at the end? Is this recency bias or whatever? No, it's not. It's usually not. Usually what it is it's the general scouting sphere getting caught up and actually getting their viewings of the player. Like I can think of, and I know a lot of people had Marco Casper in like the 25 to 30 range, but he shot up to, and I to be honest, I didn't think he was going to go 8, but no. I think that people were maybe just a little bit late to see him, in the year. And you see that you see that every year. There's always a couple of players who shoot up and just like, well, not necessarily that, they poured it on at the end. It's just that, you know, people might not have gotten to them until later on in the draft process.
Yeah, for sure. And are there any other players that you've watched so far that are in pro leagues that you think that the public hasn't quite caught onto just yet that are perhaps, I don't want to say hidden gems, but players who should be on more boards so far?
Yeah, definitely. So there is a Russian player named Timur Mukhanov, and he's with the Omsk organization. So he started out playing for Omsky Yastrebi, which is their MHL, which is their junior league. And I think he had like 15 points in 11 games or something like that. And he was promoted to their VHL, which is like their second tier. It's kind of like their AHL.
Their AHL, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say it's on par in terms of skill with like the ECHL maybe. But it's their version of the AHL. The AHL of the KHL basically. And he is not very big. He's 5'8", he's 170 pounds. He does look like a guy who can he can get pretty thick. I think I think if he grows to 5'9", he could be like a 5'9", 185 pound guy, like a pretty thick guy. He can fly. His skating is so good. He glides around the ice so smooth, but it's not necessary. Like it's fast and smooth. Like I find a lot of guys who pour it on, like Andreas Athanasiou, like I'll use him as an example, as, you know, being a Red Wings fan, he's a Red Wings draft pick. Like that guy flies and he looks like he's flying. Like he's pouring everything into it and everything. And it's there. Mukhanov is like, hypnotic in the way he moves and where it's very smooth. And then he's also like going really, really fast. So that's one thing about him. He's put up, I think, like, you know, a handful of points in his VHL games. And I've watched a few of his VHL games, and he didn't produce in those games, but his production, like, he's playing better than what his production is showing. And his size hasn't been an issue. And yes, I know it's the VHL, and I know it's not the most skilled league, but these are still grown men who are playing. And, you know, it might be a 28-year-old man who's fully developed, and, you know, and they do similar workouts and stuff like that. Like, they're still, you know, they're still strong as well. Maybe the skill and the speed and maybe the sense isn't there. Maybe that's why they're not playing in the KHL. But his size has not hindered him at all. So that was really impressive. I remember when I was first getting a buzz on him when he was in junior, I thought, oh man, this guy might be one of those guys who is such an exceptional junior player and just doesn't have what it takes. And then when he got the promotion, I was very intrigued, because I said, you know, if he can stick it out in the VHL, and if he looks like he belongs, and he's still a dangerous offensive creator, then maybe there's a lot more to this. And he's definitely looked great. I've only seen there's a few people I talk to about Russian prospects who do watch them. They're pretty tuned in, and they all have him in the late first, early second. I'm kind of in like the early second range, maybe 40, 45. But the national scouts don't have this guy anywhere near. Central Scouting had him as a B grade, which is a second or third round pick. But I haven't seen any other national scout even mention his name once. So that's kind of my guy who I think is playing in a pro league. I have another non-Russian player who I love. And this started back at the Hlinka Gretzky, and I was watching Sweden, and I was watching Theo Lindstein. And little did I know that I would actually spend more time watching his defensive partner on the right side, Axel Sandin Pelikka. And he is great. And what's funny about Axel Sandin Pelikka, for those who have watched, is he is a great skater. He's got great speed. He's very fluid. His great lateral mobility. He's got a good shot. He's very offensively gifted. He scored a shootout goal a couple of days ago, and it looked like something that a really skilled forward would do in the NHL. It was really nice. But what actually got me on Sandin Pelikka when I watched him in the Hlinka was I think it was back-to-back shifts. He shut down a guy right at the blue line, you know, preventing his own entry, and it was just played so perfectly. And I'm like, wow, this guy did it because he had great positioning. He was skating with this guy like stride for stride, and he ended up just, you know, edging him out into the boards. And I said, oh, I got to watch this guy. And then all of a sudden, he's over, you know, he's 1.3 points per game in the J20 league, their junior league. He's already getting a bunch of minutes now. I think he's now logging over 10 minutes a game in the SHL. And since Elias Salomonsson, I believe he was a Winnipeg draft pick last year, since he went down, when Sandin Pelikka plays in the SHL, he's not the seventh defenseman anymore. He's playing on the second pair. So he's definitely getting more looks. His defensive game at the pro level is not there yet. But the fact that he's still trusted to play 12 minutes, many of those at 5-on-5, whether it's because of necessity due to injury is another thing, but the fact that they're trusting him does show a lot. And he's been like, he's the best player. I think he's the best player in the J20 junior league right now when he's playing. I'm trying to think of anybody who's better.
I'm not sure. I also know, like, I love him too, and I'll get to my take on ASP afterwards, but I know that Josh has also watched some Axel Sandin Pelikka, and you've been very impressed with him too.
Yeah, I think he's great. I think the one thing that really has impressed me about his game, or more surprised, is just he's got that physical edge that you don't see in that kind of style of defenseman. You hear smooth skating, good in the offensive zone, you think of like a Lane Hudson, where it's but he can deliver a big hit, he can time it well. Like, of course, he's not very good in his defensive zone right now, but that's something that I think could be rectified. But I really love that he could play offensively, and he has that physical edge. That's just, it's just such a unique combination. That's two really fun things to watch put together, and it's just amazing to watch so far from what I've seen a couple of games of him. It's been great.
Yeah, he's laid a few guys out that I've seen. He's explosive in a lot of what he does, and he translates that into his hits.
Yeah, for sure. I think my first takeaway, because I watched him for the first time just like, I think about a week ago, and then I got in the second viewing a couple days ago, and he's just shot up my board. Like, after the first viewing, I was like, oh, okay, he's a first-round talent, cool. And I know that during our preliminary meeting at Dauber, the two players that we're really talking about as like kind of off the board guys in the first round were Sandy Pelica and Luca Pinelli. And both of those are now very solidly inside my personal first round. I am going to fight tooth and nail to get Pinelli inside our top 25 on Sunday. And I'm going to fight to get Sandy Pelica in the top 20 too. I adore both players, but what struck me the most right off the bat was he has a very unique combination of not only like the fluidity in his stride, his four-way mobility, he has like exceptional knee bend as well. Like his stride mechanics are one of the best in the entire draft class, but he really does like link that in with a good motor, right? He puts in that effort as well, which is not something you see too often with that offensive oriented, undersized, well, like good skating defenseman. It's usually like either you get this or you get that, especially for guys that you don't rank within the top 10. I think Sandy Pelica is going to be in my 10 to 15 range once I finalize my board before Sunday. But he's so much fun to watch. He's probably one of the most fun players in the entire draft class because every movement he makes is mesmerizing. Every play he makes is intelligent. With the puck, I'm thinking really offensively, he's very, very calculated and creative and explosive, as you were saying, Jordan, right? He's a lot of fun in transition. He has a good delay game. He uses his teammates well. He's not selfish by any means. And it's kind of like an ideal profile for this type of player, which is why I'm becoming a really big fan as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And because like you said, his bend and flexibility and everything is so good that, and his mechanics are so great, is that he's already got that. Whereas a lot of players, it's like, oh, well, you need to brush up on that. You know, you need to correct this. You need to, you know, get a little bit more flexible here, and you need to work on this, and your stride, you know, needs to be corrected a bit. And you also need to get bigger and stronger. He already has the mechanical parts. And when he gets stronger, he's already explosive. Like, he's 17 years old. I think he's a May or March, April or May. So he's not like a super old player for this draft class. But when he becomes 20, when he's 21 years old and he's had, you know, a few seasons, you know, in the SHL and in, you know, maybe he's a season in the AHL or he's in the NHL already, he'll be that much more explosive than he is right now, just because he'll put on that strength.
And speaking of mobile creative defensemen, the only other defenseman I currently have in my top 12 and who is a little bit higher up on my board than Sandy Pelica is Mikhail Guliaev.
Yeah.
How has he been in your viewings? Because to me, he's been exceptionally mobile, very creative. The offensive ceiling is very high with him. But what's your takeaway?
Yeah, he is, Axel Sandin Pelica, he can move. I think Pelica's faster, or Sandin Pelica's faster. I think he's more explosive, but I think in our Dauber meeting, I think I compared him to a cornerback in football who has to mirror a wide receiver. And you have to have this, like, I think in my write-up, I said he has oily hips in the sense that, like, it's, and it sounds gross, but like, it's,
It's so smooth, huh?
Yeah, he's so smooth, and his change of, like, he could, I think his change of directions and his and like his bend and his flexibility are so good that he doesn't slow down much when he's like changing directions. Like it's really, really good. I think that he's a better passer and a better lateral mover than Axel Sandin Pelikka. I don't think his shot is as good as Sandin Pelikka's, and straight line speed isn't as good. But he's an excellent skater in his own right. And also another guy who isn't like, you know, Josh, you mentioned, you know, Sandin Pelikka is not afraid to lay guys out. I've seen Guliaev like really get aggressive in some of my viewings. Maybe not necessarily at the KHL level, because he would get clobbered by some guys because he is smaller. But in junior viewings, he does have a great motor, and he does have some grit and some jam to him. I would say right now for him is I kind of wish that. I get frustrated watching some Russian prospects because I don't feel the clubs do the greatest job at putting the players in the positions to really succeed. He's way too good for the MHL. He set a record for
2 points a game, right?
Points per game or points. Total points for a D-1. It wasn't even close. I think he beat it by like 30%. He's got 9 points in three MHL games, I believe.
Oh my god,
he's played a lot in the KHL, but he's been playing very like limited minutes, seventh defenseman stuff, and he doesn't have to play in the KHL. I don't know why they don't just have him as a fixture in the VHL there like they have with Mikhanov. I think if he played there, he would be a guy who is your power play one quarterback. He's in your top four, you know, D. The size, like he's still able to, you know, compete physically, because I think that the thing is in the KHL and the games I've watched is he thinks well, he knows what he's doing and everything. He's just not there yet. I had him at 12 on my board prior to the season. I think he's probably in the. I have him right neck and neck with Axel Sandin Pelikka, who I'd probably have in like 15 to 16 or so. So maybe he's dropped a little bit, but he's an excellent prospect.
Interesting, because I also have both players right in the same range. Like currently, I have a tier that stretches from 7 to 12. Mm-hmm. And it's Gavin Brindley. Don't get me started on Gavin Brindley. I could talk about that guy for ages. Yep. Edward Schala, Mikhail Guliaev at 9, Axel Sandin Pelikka at 10, Callum Ritchie at 11, and Braden Yeager at 12.
Yeah, and when I say my ranges, I don't necessarily mean like, oh, if I say 15 or 16, that I can definitively name 14 players who I'd have over him. I just
look exactly.
I look at a thing and say I would be comfortable using the 15th pick on him if, you know, barring like some complete catastrophe where like a, you know, Matvei Michkov fell to 15, which he won't. But that's kind of my thing. But as you go down, you start to realize like, hey, maybe there's not as many people or as many prospects who are actually above this guy, and therefore, by process elimination, he's now the 12th best prospect. Then I would look at it and say, okay, well, you know, yeah, maybe that is who he is. But yeah, right. Yeah, that's just kind of my logic on all this.
Like for me, it's in my experience this year, it's been kind of the opposite effect of that. I almost underestimated the quality of the draft class, like already knowing it was going to be very, very strong. But
yeah,
I had like Callum Ritchie, who I also did. I have cooled on him a little bit over the past month, just with how his plays evolved over the last like month or two. But it's not that he's falling because of his play necessarily. It's just guys are just edging him out for me, right? Where it's just, I just see better combinations of skill and deception and motor and intelligence. Like Gavin Brindley is not a guy that I was even really on my radar in September, right? Like I wasn't, I was focused solely on OHL guys at that point. So I was like, oh, okay. So I would fight for Richie at like seventh overall. Whereas now that I've watched Gavin Brindley, I'm like, I'm picking Brindley ahead of Callum Ritchie without much hesitation. But yeah, it's a little bit interesting to see how that's evolved the more I've watched outside of my area of like Dobber scouting, right? Because like my job is solely the OHL, but the more I've watched from everywhere else, the kind of weaker I found the OHL draft class. Like at the beginning of the year in our first meeting, we had Callum Ritchie and Cam Allen at 9 and 10 overall, right?
For sure. Yeah. You'd never have Cam Allen anywhere near that at this point.
No, like, I don't want Cam Allen in the first round. And I am also skeptical of having Colby Barlow in the first round. And he's dominant in terms of production in the OHL. But I'm seeing a Josh Anderson type player, right? Like it's been interesting just to see how like how it's progressed over the season to see like the guys that I've been scouting a lot more than everyone else just kind of steadily falling down my board, except with the notable exception of Luca Pinelli. Luca Pinelli, have you gotten an opportunity to watch him a few times?
I've only ever watched him at games I've gone to in person. I went to the game where Tyler Boucher gave the poor kid from the Sioux a seizure.
I was happy I missed that game.
I was sweating when I was watching that because it happened in the sideboards right in front of me, so you can't see it was very scary though. The players are freaking out, but so I was at that game. Oh, Pinelli was the best player on the ice that game. And that's a very good Ottawa team that also has guys who have been drafted. You know, it's got Tyler Boucher, it's got Roar, it's got Mateer, it's got drawing a blank on a couple other guys, but it's got a lot of like really, really good players. And to have a draft eligible be the best player on the ice is pretty amazing. Like Bryce McConnell Barker was on the ice for the Sioux. They're a way different players. They're way different players, but Pinelli was so good that game. It's funny they have him like as a trigger man sometimes on their power
play. Right? It's very strange utilization.
He was doing it well, worked.
I completely agree. Like his power play utilization, like I'm critical of it, but Ottawa's power play, at least as of like 2 or 3 weeks ago, was running at 38%. So it's like, can you really criticize it? Not really. It's working, but he's such a talented playmaker, and using him as like almost like an Ovechkin, but from the right circle.
Yeah.
Without like having him involved in puck movement is such an odd decision when he's by far the most intelligent player on that team, which is the best team in the entire OHL.
Yeah.
But also such a skilled playmaker. And yeah, it's definitely been interesting. But I think one thing that I've really enjoyed watching this year has just been seeing his chemistry with Vincenz Rohr continue to improve. They are getting they've played basically every single 5-on-5 shift this season together, which has meant that Rohr that Pinelli has been playing on the wing. I still think he does project as a center. But he has exclusively played wing this season. So that might contribute to him not being ranked as highly by other people due to the position, but he is so intelligent. And the more I watch, the more he catches up to Callum Ritchie. Like right now I have him closer to Callum Ritchie than the next best OHL talent behind Pinelli. I think those are the top two OHL guys. But it's been so much, it's been a real pleasure to be able to watch him like 4 or 5 times a month live this season. Like I've been going to a lot of games it's been like, every time I go, not only do I get to see a fun Habs prospect and Vincenz Rohr, whose progression has been incredible. Like I was not very high on Rohr last season, but he progressed so well in the off season, and he's transformed his game. Now he's far more projectable. He's added layers of dynamism and skill that weren't really apparent last year, while also being far more comfortable as a center. Last season he was used as a center, but it kind of looked like they're shoehorning him into that position. But this year, there's a reason that Pinelli is on the wing on that line, and it's not because Pinelli is a bad center. It's just because Vincenz Rohr has really taken the position of center by the horns and just he's made it his own. But yeah, Pinelli's been awesome. Are there any other North American guys that you've gotten a chance to watch, or have you really exclusively been scouting?
I've been almost exclusively European players. I'm just trying to think. Yeah, like I like Denver.
Yeah, no, so no. I mean, I've had very limited viewings of European guys, right? So, sure. Okay, so what else did I want to?
Can I ask a quick question?
Please. Yeah, oh my God.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's just more of a general question because, like, as you said, so many people are unfamiliar with the European game and how all the leagues and everything. Just where do you suggest beginning if you're trying to get into it, and especially European scouting?
For sure. So I'm glad you asked that question. It's a little difficult at first, and it's a little overwhelming, especially like the first thing is that the games are on when you're waking up, especially the Russian games. Like the MHL will play at, you know, the equivalent of like 6 a.m. Eastern time during the week. And it's,
But they are on YouTube. Those games are on YouTube.
Which is great. Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah, they are on YouTube. Another thing actually that the Russian leagues have done to get, I think, more viewership is that, the names on the back of the jerseys are in English and not in Cyrillic. So you can find a player better. But yeah, it's difficult at first because, you know, you can go on to, you know, Twitter and follow a few people. And, you know, as long as you're following a few, you know, prominent people, whether it's guys from Dauber or EP or the Tony Ferrari's Will Scouches or Pronmans and Wheelers of the world and everything. And Chris Peters and all that, you're going to get a good vibe on a lot of the North American players, then you'll be able to, you know, kind of say, oh yeah, I know that, you know, this guy plays for that team and everything. There's a lot fewer people, you know, kind of in that Twitter verse who are watching European prospects. And then there's also, you know, fewer when you go to Russia as well. But what I kind of want to explain a little bit about Russian hockey and their system is they're not a lot different in terms of the structure of the actual leagues themselves compared to Sweden. Like Sweden has the Swedish Hockey League, which is, you know, their NHL, as the Hockey Allsvenskan, which is their like AHL. And then they have the J20 National, which is their junior league. Russia has the KHL, which is their pro league. Their top pro league, they have the VHL, which is their second tier pro league, and they have their MHL, which is their junior league. So that's pretty comparable. The thing is that Russia is a huge country, and there's so many teams in each of those leagues, and unfortunately, because it's, you know, like you look at the CHL and, you know, the OHL, WHL, QMJHL, and there's a draft. So because of that, the parity is always, you know, pretty good. You know, hey, you have a couple good drafts, you go on a run, you trade some draft picks, get some players, and you compete, you try to go for a Memorial Cup, and then you rebuild, and you might suck for a couple years and you build it up, right? Well, in Russia, there's a few powerhouses which have all the money, and they're running the show, you know, year in and year out. They might not necessarily win it, but their teams are always competitive. They're able to, you know, if you get a really good player, I'm thinking about Alexander Nikishin, who's a Carolina Hurricanes defensive prospect, and he was traded for like six guys in the offseason. Like, and he went to SKA, or I could say SKA, St. Petersburg, which is like the kind of the big club. In Russia, you have it, like Russian hockey is dominated by a lot of the big clubs. There's CSKA Moscow, Sergei Fedorov's the head coach of that. There's SKA St. Petersburg. There's Lokomotiv Yaroslavl. That's another big, you know, club. There's the Omsk, Avangard Omsk organization. That's another big one. There's Torpedo. There is Dynamo Moscow, which is where Ovechkin played. You know, there's, and I'm probably missing a couple more. Oh, and then there's Magnitogorsk. As well, like Daniil Yurov was, you know, that's where he was from. So you have a lot of these teams there. And it's what's funny, what's different about Russia compared to any other league is that some teams have multiple junior teams in the same league. Like, could you imagine if there was like a three Kitchener Rangers franchises? Like, it'd be so weird, right? And their players can change from one team to another. So St. Petersburg has three teams in the MHL. They have, SKA 1946 St. Petersburg. That's like their good team. And then they have SKA Varyagi. And then they have SKA Karelia. And those other two teams are terrible. Like, they're not very good at all. However, if you're like a 16-year-old, a D-1 player, and you're not good enough to play for the big team, you might start there as a D-1, and then your draft year come up. So anyways, that's kind of it. I guess what I recommend to people is you do have to find a few people who are really connected in terms of, not just like about who they know, but like in connected in terms of, hey, they might know a bit about the league. They're good resources. You know, there's a lot of people who always who clip GIFs of different players and who might follow certain clubs, and you kind of get to know about all the stuff there. And then what I did, actually, I looked at the map of Russia and I looked at where all the different clubs were, and I realized, like, you know, obviously because of Siberia being in the middle and uninhabited pretty much, that 80% of the clubs are in the west side, and then there's a few that are far in the east side. And then you start to look at, the different cities they're in, and then you start to see the power divides, just in terms of money and everything. And you kind of go from there. Because there's so many teams, and because there is a lot of, money, I think, that kind of controls some of the clubs, is that their junior league, although has some really good teams and really good players, there are some really horrible teams in the MHL. Like, I think their MHL has 33 teams, and you could have a team that would be like, could contend for like a Memorial Cup, and then you could have a team that would probably finish dead last in the AJHL. Like, that's the difference in the parity. And I know I'm going long on this, but that is one thing to consider. So you can say, like, I've watched a prospect where he's been playing against a really, really lousy team, and he just looks like he can do anything. And it's like, well, he's going up against a guy who probably won't even play in the VHL ever in his life. And who might, once they turn 18, they might go off to college or university and stuff like that. And they might never play, or, they might never play hockey again once they age out of junior, I guess. Right. So that is one thing that you need to consider there.
Awesome. And I think on that note, we're going to wrap up this episode, but we're going to have a part two that'll come out in a few days with Jordan. So definitely stay tuned for that. Boys chase girls going 30 mile an hour. Circle up at the